This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey, 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 happy birthday to my bae, friend bae, Tiffany.
Meanwhile, like, the next time we tape, my birthday will actually be closer.
What?
But, no, that's right, that's true. It'll be past, but only by 2 days.
I'm like, my math, it cannot be that incorrect.
Yeah, well, thank you. Either way, I'm going to be turning, none of your business. Like, no, I'll be turning 38, which sounds so crazy coming out of my mouth. I'm like, I still feel 25.
38 sounds great.
Yeah, no, I'm excited because Superman was like, you're not allowed to do any work. He told me weeks in advance or months in advance, like, take that whole weekend off. And he's been like leaving the house on secret jaunts with like his sister and his best friend and like asking me all these cryptic questions about like what shoe size do I wear. I'm like, Lord, what is he doing?
Shoe size.
I don't know.
Ooh, roller skating. Ooh, let's guess. Roller skating. I hope it's not bowling.
Right? Or just like, what size in general? What size do you wear in this? What size do you wear in that? Do you like earrings? I'm like, what is happening?
Oh, maybe he's going to pretty woman you.
I feel like it. Honestly, yeah. I have a strong suspicion, which I'm slightly nervous about because we have different tastes, let's just say.
We've heard a little bit about that.
Yeah. Superman would have me in like door knockers and like, you know, cross colors if it was up to him. So I'm just like, yeah, let's not go too crazy with the outfit or whatever it is. But I did tell him that because he'd asked me kind of like, what did I want? And I said, honestly, a house. And then I'm like, now that's happening. So now I told him, honestly, I just want to spend like a nice day with him, just enjoying, nothing too crazy. I'm not, you know, he was like, would you want to go to a club? I'm like, nah, I mean, I'd have to really be in a mood. It's possible, but I doubt it. So we'll see.
In my experience, going to the club with your SO is not that much fun.
Yeah.
Like, with your husband. I mean, I love my husband, but I'd much rather be on a couch watching Netflix than like spending $15 on a cocktail with him. Like with other people, it's whatever. But, you know, it's just kind of like, it's a little awkward.
Yeah, I feel like that too. So I was like, yeah, no, likely no club. No club for you.
But like my mom says, whatever they do, just tell them you love it.
Yes, I have perfected that. This is amazing. I'm trying to get my voice right. Oh, my God. No, that's too high. Oh, my God. Okay, that's good. That's my normal natural. No, but I'm sure it's going to be awesome.
Bless them. Well, happy early birthday. I will toast to you from the resort in the Dominican Republic where I will be beginning tomorrow. I'm so excited.
Yeah. How long are you guys going to be there?
Just for a wedding. So we're going to be there Wednesday through Sunday. So
nice.
Four days-ish. Yeah. It's one perk of marrying a Dominican, I guess, is you get to go to all the Dominican weddings. So I'm really excited.
How did the Dominican Republic fare during the hurricanes?
Really, actually, they got really lucky. As far as I know from his family and friends and what we've heard from them, they got really lucky. Of course, okay. You know, extended family in Puerto Rico, which there's not very many, weren't as lucky. But yeah, actually, I joke because I'm like, yeah, I married a Dominican, so I get to go whenever I want. But joke's on me because his family's actually from the Santiago, the city of Santiago, which is like smack in the middle of the country. No water, no river, like barely even rivers. Like it's just like the jungle and well, not really a jungle, but it's like rainforest and there's like the worst mosquitoes you'll ever encounter in your life. So,
oh my gosh, that's hilarious. You're thinking you're like, ooh, sun and surf, and they're like, yeah, more like birds and trees, which are beautiful, but not what you were thinking.
More like, you know, come visit my uncle, and here's a mango from his tree, and here's some eggs from his chickens. Like, you know, it's just like more country than that. It has its charms, but you know, it's not a 4-star resort. which is, you know, has its charms, obviously.
Yes.
But I'm looking forward to it. I'm really excited.
Anyway,
I could use a vacation after what's happening.
I know. I was in the world. So many things. I'm like, what should we dig through first?
We have to talk about this whole Harvey Weinstein controversy. I feel like everybody's talking about it now.
Everybody. And I'm like, it just keeps getting worse and worse. And I'm like, what? I mean, you know, well, for those of you who are like, what? Harvey Weinstein. So just to set the stage, he's a producer, Mandy?
He's like the producer. I mean,
okay, the producer.
I don't even know if the producer is a big enough word for him, but he co-founded Miramax, which was ginormous.
Yes.
Still powerful, but not as ginormous as it was like in the 90s. But his company produces films that lots of us have watched and heard of, like Good Will Hunting and Shakespeare in Love, like all these films that have won Oscars over the years. And I always knew him as like that person people thanked in their acceptance speeches, but I never really knew who he was, you know? Like, mm-hmm. Thank you, Harvey, darling, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, while he was helping people launch their careers, he was also groping them in dozens of hotel rooms around the world.
Yes, and basically imposing the power struggle. Basically, like, so these young women who were, you know, like up and coming models or actresses or whatever, putting them in positions. I think I read Ashley Judd, which I love Ashley Judd. That when she was a young, up-and-coming actress, you know, Harvey had her in the room and was, like, basically trying to make overtures. And she was like, yeah, no, I'm kind of good. It was like, well, then watch me shower and all this other kind of stuff. And she didn't know what to do because, you know, what do you do when you're like, wow, this person can make or literally destroy my acting career? What do you do?
Yeah, he was literally producing the movie that she was shooting at that time.
Yep. And so she was so nervous. So she turned him down, obviously, but was nervous about what was that going to mean. She told her mom, I think I read this article, she told her mom, and her mom was like, yes, that was definitely sexual harassment. I mean, she went on to obviously do the movie and do well, and she said she didn't have an incident from him after that. But still, other actresses are coming forward, like Gwyneth Paltrow and Angelina Jolie, and just like, wow. And just like his secretaries and all that kind of stuff. And you're just like, what, you know?
That's what really grosses me out about the story. Because so first there was a New York Times article. And in the New York Times article, they say there are several other media organizations that have been trying to do this story for years. But they couldn't get enough people to come forward. But so the New York Times finally gets, I think, enough people to come forward and use their names to go forward with their story. And then the New Yorker today published their takedown, which included women who said that he actually assaulted them and in some cases possibly allegedly raped them himself on them. And then on top of that, the New York Times ran another story where like Gwyneth Paltrow and bigger names are coming out now acknowledging. And it's what's really freaking creepy is like and I'm sure even the reporters have more. I'm sure they have more examples of this than they even included in their stories, but all the stories sound the same. Like he invited me to a room and there was a casting agent or an assistant who was supposed to be there, but they disappeared. And then we were alone. And then he asked for a massage. Like it's constantly him asking for a massage or watch me undress or watch me take a shower, you know, come into the bath with me. Like, so, and it's just uncanny how all the stories are the same. And he's been doing this for so long. And it was this apparently, I mean, we're not in the world of Hollywood, but apparently it was this like open secret for so long.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we're at a point where, you know, he's been out. First, he took a leave of absence. Then I'm pretty sure his company saw the New Yorker story or were asked to comment on it and then actually fired him. So now he's been completely ousted from his company. But I'm like, how did it go on? I guess I understand how it went on for so long because we've seen it in so many other cases, like Roger Ailes, Bill O'Reilly, Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
Bill Cosby, it was a sort of the same thing where, oh, he gave me a drink and then I woke up and I had no idea what happened.
Yeah. You're like, because what does this mean? Because obviously he clearly targeted people who were, you know, up and coming or, you know, I mean, there are not too many people, honestly, in the movie industry that were bigger than Harvey. So almost everybody is quote unquote below him you know? And so I just can't imagine being like, you know, this like up and coming actress and wanting to succeed. And then this man who, you know, is all powerful in this industry, and he comes on to you and you're like, what do I do? I can't, like, am I supposed to tell? Because then if you tell, that's it for your career. Like, what do you do? That's why so many people didn't want to come forward. I can understand that.
Yeah. And Lean, like, there's been a lot of, I think in the day, like the days after the New York Times story, because that was like last week that came out, people were being critical of the lack of, you know, after a story like this comes out, typically you hear from females in the industry, like we did, we heard from like Lena Dunham and others. But a lot of people were like, where are the men at? Where are the men at condemning this behavior? And I think I just today saw a headline from Matt Damon.
And Ben Affleck, too.
Oh, Ben Affleck, too, who came out and spoke out. Because their movie, Good Will Hunting, you know, was produced by him. So, but I'd be interested to see who else in the industry speaks out against it. Because like, even faves like Meryl Streep have in their speeches been like, I have to thank this man. You know, he made my career. You know, I owe him everything. And
yeah,
it's icky. It's and it's just like another. And I was reading the stories in the New Yorker because I think it had better anecdotes from the women who were impacted. Like there was one woman who was an Italian actress who alleges that he forced himself on her, and she eventually gave in to what he was trying to do and went through with it, and how she just blamed herself for years and years. And it was really the nuances. I think it really, her story especially, I think was a good example of how gray and icky and complex sometimes instances of sexual assault can be. It's not the black and white, you know, he forced himself on me and I kicked him in the balls and ran away.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much psychological like warfare happening, and the power dynamic between, you know, this great, like you said, like a media mogul and a young actress is so just like having all that pressure on you, and then someone's forcing himself on you. I can't blame, and I hope that it's sad to me to hear the women, the victims blaming themselves, but I think it's important to hear their stories because it shows that even if it's not that movie version of sexual assault, it's still assault.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they still deserve to have a voice and to speak out against it and not feel like they're going to be persecuted because it wasn't like a textbook, you know, sexual assault, if there is such a thing.
Yeah. Well, why now did the New Yorker kind of say, cause I kind of like perused through the article, like what, you know, what was the tipping point that made this story break?
Honestly, the way that the New York Times, like I said, the New York Times article had acknowledged that several other organizations have been trying to write the story for years. And in fact, a couple of them are working on stories right now. I think the New York Times was the first one to get enough people to go on the record. They probably got Ashley Judd and a couple of other women to come on the record. And they were like, okay, we have enough information. We can go forward. And they probably got those on the record comments before the other organizations did. And then I think the New Yorker right behind them. The New Yorker probably might have even been ready to publish her own story last week, but maybe waited. This is just me kind of understanding how like media organizations wait. So if the New York Times scoops you on a story, like that sucks. But then you go and try and get more sources, more on the record sources, and run your own story. And I think that the New York Times finally got enough people after all these years to go on the record, publish their story, and now, like we've seen in the past with Bill Cosby and others, as soon as the first story goes out, everyone, or not everybody, but like a lot of people want to come forward. And then you'll start seeing stories everywhere. Shoot.
Yeah. Well, that's because then I can understand people are like, you know, oh, why are you saying something now? Because if I don't think anyone's going to believe me, I'm likely not to say anything. But once somebody can confirm, and sometimes you think you're the only person when something bad happens to you. And then you find out, wait, that happened to you too. So there's the safety of like, I can now be believed, you know? And I think a lot of the actresses that are coming forward now, you know, they have these established careers that he can't necessarily harm, like when they were beginning, you know, kind of like new actresses. So I could see why Ashley Judd was like, you know what? I can come out now because I'm established and this is not right, you know?
We are not friendly to young women who speak out who are not established. Because, like, there was one woman, I think it was the New Yorker, who got the audio. So this woman basically went to the police, said that he groped her. And the police wanted to put together a sting operation, so they mic'd her up and sent him to his hotel room and wanted her to have a conversation with him about what happened. And she does. And anyway, the New Yorker has the audio of it, and it's really disgusting. And when he's like, I'm a very famous man, you know, don't embarrass yourself. Don't lose your friendship with me for 5 minutes, because he wanted her to come talk to him for 5 minutes. Anyway, but this woman actually, so she went to the police. I believe she went out. She's come out before and gone public with her accusations. And all of a sudden there was like his lawyers, there was a smear campaign against her. You know, yeah, they dug that up this stuff in her past. And I mean, and honestly, if I were a woman who had been assaulted by a famous man, or like a man in a place of power, and I saw that it took 30 years for this to come forward, like it wouldn't encourage me to speak up. These types of stories, I just feel like they almost make you feel like even less like you want to speak up, because clearly it took like so many years, so many voices coming together for this kind of story to come out.
And I mean, I agree. I don't know that. I mean, when someone's in the position of power, it's not just like, it's your livelihood. What do you say? You know?
And I always go back to that story of, it doesn't have to be sexual assault. It's like, do you remember that story when I was at Yahoo and I had the makeup artist? I was working with this makeup artist. He had been working there for like, I think a year or two. And slowly over the course of working with him, he would say the most mean, like abusive, like manipulative things to me, just like little things, like, you know, he would, I'm struggling to come up with examples now because it's been so long, but in one case, he was like really, really being rough with my makeup. And I said, you know, could you please, you know, go lighter with the makeup. And this was toward the end of all these altercations we had over the course of like 6 months or whatever. And he's like, well, you know, this is why no one wants to work with you at Yahoo. This is why no one wants. He would say these little things, and I would want to not be a diva. There was always other people in the room, and I was not a lowly, but I wasn't like Katie Couric. And, you know, I wasn't I wasn't top of the call sheet. I was just in my, doing my little money minutes, you know, getting my makeup done or whatever. So I didn't want to cause a stink. But then finally I opened up to another girl, another young reporter who is an anchor on one of the shows. And she was like, oh my God, he says the most abusive things to me too. And then another girl talked about how one time he looked at her and was like, you know, asked her who abused her as a child to make her act like the way she was acting.
Oh my gosh.
And we all three were like, you know, in my case, it wasn't like everything he was saying to me was so, it wasn't going to break me. It wasn't like, you know, I wasn't going to walk out of there as a whole human, but they were just slowly, just like very, very like disturbing and like verbally abusive things that he was saying. And then to find out other women were experiencing it. And then we sent a group email to the video department, and he ended up not working there anymore. But that to me, it's like an example of, it's just like little subtle things that can like add up. And then I was like, well, why didn't I say anything sooner? You know, that the head of video even asked me, you know, why didn't you say anything sooner? And I'm like,
women are taught not to be troublemakers. You're taught not to rock the boat. You're taught not to disrupt, you know?
Yeah. And you're also taught, it's almost like it's like, oh, is it really that bad? It's like, no one teaches you. When is it, you know, when is it so bad that you have to speak up? You know, I don't know. It just didn't seem so black and white to me that, okay, I really need to speak up. But then, and also didn't seem, you know, I'm a tough cookie. Like, I can take this jackass, you know, saying things to me. But then to find out that other women had been spoken to even worse than I had, and like, maybe if I had spoken up, he would have been fired and, you know, he wouldn't have had an opportunity. I always think about that. And I don't know. I don't know if I would do anything differently. I wish I could say, yeah, you know, I would go back and speak up earlier, but you never know until you're in that seat as a young woman.
No, you're right. You never know, honestly, until it's so easy, until kind of like your back is against the wall. And I find that I'm a much better advocate for other people than I am for myself. Oh, you know?
100%.
And so, you know, it's easy for me. Like, if I see someone doing something wrong to someone else, I'm like, what? Like, no, but me, I'm like, well, you know, I could take it. I can, a lot of times I stand up only because like you said, I think about, well, what does this mean for someone else, you know?
I know. Is there any case in your life where you're like, have you ever had an interaction with someone consecutive times and you're like, next time I'm going to say this, or like, next time I'm going to do this different, and then it keeps happening, and then you just, for some reason or the other, continue to not speak up for yourself?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I told you, like, I had a bad habit of having, like, and thank you guys for tweeting me about, like, someone actually told me, they're like, I'm a bully friend. I'm like, oh. Oh, people are, like, confessing. I'm so sorry. So, yeah, because, I tend to, I don't know if it's, like, middle child syndrome, but I'm a people pleaser. And so I always take it really personally if someone is mean to me or doing something, because I think to myself, well, what did I do to elicit this response? I must not be nice enough. I got to smile enough and perky enough and, hey, it's okay. I'm, you know, and what's so bad about when someone is just nasty or mean and they pick up on, oh, I got me a people pleaser here, they will abuse you more than the average. And so I've definitely been there where I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, this has gotten too far. I'm, you know, next time I'm going to say, hey, you, not today. And I'm like, and then it happens. And I'm like, you know what? Actually, I'm just going to be even nicer. But then every once in a while, like, I will break where it'll be like, I'm exhausted and I've tried and I'm tired. And then I will be like, not today, you know, and I finally signed up for myself. And they're like, and I find that sometimes, like, I remember when I used to teach preschool, I had this woman who was so mean to me. And I was 22 and she was like 40 something, and she just made it so difficult to be a good teacher. And she finally, I snapped and I said, enough. You're not going to talk to me this way. You're not going to treat me this way. It was another layer that she was older. And like, I just grew up like in a culture where you really don't talk back to older people. Like, there's a level of respect that you must display. And so finally I snapped, and that was all she needed. She basically was like, girl, I was waiting for you to stick up for yourself. And I'm like, really? So abuse for a year? But yeah, it's not easy to stand up for yourself. But for some people, they have an easier time. But for me, it's certainly not easy. But I'm definitely gotten better at it, where I don't let it linger as long as I used to, or I recognize it further away, where if I see someone has that tendency, I just, I'm like, okay, I'm not even going to allow them into my space. So I try to like nip it off at the bud, because I'm, like I said, I hate conflict. I don't like people being upset with me. And so it's not really my nature to, like, if me and Superman are like in a, you know, like we're having an argument or whatever, I'm the silent one. Like, you know, like, he's like, well, let's talk about it. And I'm like, I don't want conflict. I will just pretend like it never happened. Okay. He's like, that's not
sounds healthy.
But he's so good. I'm like, where'd you learn how to communicate like this? He's such a good communicator. Like, so yesterday, you know, I could tell you were mad. So what happened? And I'm like, who are you? He's like, Dr. Phil. And meanwhile, I'm like, no, nothing. I'm fine. He's like, really? Because you haven't spoken to me in 24 hours. I'm like, have I been silent? Let's just. So. Yeah, no, so that's why I feel for these women, because I can't imagine, you know, because I've thankfully only been in a situation like once where I was like, oh my God, I remember I met this guy at the mall. He was cute. And I gave him my number and we were like, oh, we're going to hang out. And I made the mistake of, like, I was young. I had to be like 18 or something. And he's like, oh, he picked me up. He was like, oh, I've got to go to the house to get my wallet. I forgot it. So being dumb, I said, sure. So went to his apartment to get his quote unquote wallet. And I knew it was going to be some trouble when he locked the door. Not like locked it like you can't get out, but like, what do you need to lock the door for if you're getting your wallet? I remember thinking like, oh, snap. And I remember being like, okay, he's like, sit down, make yourself comfortable. It was a studio. There was no place to sit but the bed. So I sat like at the edge of the bed, and he came out of the room. Like, he went to the bathroom. He's like, I just got to go to the bathroom. Mandy, he came out naked. And I was like, oh my God.
You were Harvey'd.
Yes. And I remember thinking to myself, honestly, I've never been raped before. I'm going to be raped today. Like, I remember literally like bracing myself for, it's going to happen, Tiffany. Like, okay, you have to brace yourself. And he got on like the bed behind me, like, so he's laying and I'm literally, I mean, I could not have sat more on the edge of the bed. And I don't know what he was doing behind me. The TV was on and we sat like that for like an hour.
He said nothing. I said nothing. And I was just like, what is happening? Like, I don't know what he was waiting for. I don't know. And so nothing happened. I literally sat at the edge and he was behind me. I don't know if he was touching himself. I don't know. And then finally he was like, all right, so are you ready to go? And I said, yep. Because I was afraid to run to the door because I didn't know if something in me, and now I look back on it, some people like to chase. And so something in me said, don't move. You know, that like if I would have ran for the door and tried to unlock the lock and get the key, that he would have like attacked me. And so me not saying anything and not moving, it was like, okay, he was bored with this is not the gap. I can't wrestle her to the ground. She's not moving. She's not crying. She's not anything. I just didn't say anything. And so we left and I remember, you know, him saying that, oh, I'll drop you off. And I had him like drop me off like 4 blocks away from like where I live. Like, oh, yeah, this is my house. Okay, bye. What? And it was the time of beepers. And then he like paged me, was like, hey, I'd like to see you again. Of course, I ignored it. Then oh my gosh, started going ballistic, paging and calling and calling. It was crazy. Like, I know where you live. I could come to your house at any time. I'm like, yeah, go to that house if you want to. I don't live there. But I remember thinking to myself, yo, first and last of putting myself in a position like that because of like me being like dumb. So, yeah.
Well, dumb, you know, be nice. You were young. I mean, you don't want to blame yourself. At the end of the day, he's the creep.
That's true. But I just mean like as a woman, like I had to like really recognize that like I have to be on guard because I grew up pretty sheltered. I never had to really be on guard before. And I honestly wasn't the first time I recognized that that in college I learned that if you agree to go to a guy's room, then it was like you were sending a silent message to many men that like, oh, I'm down for the get down. And it took me a while. Like I can remember going to a guy's room thinking we were going to study. And like, he's like, oh, thinking like we're going to make out. And I'm like, no. And he wasn't like particularly mad, but he was surprised. Like, well, why'd you come? And I'm like, well, is that the thing? Like, if I come to your room, that means that I'm agreeing to at the very least make out. And so I just stopped going to anyone's room. And I remember asking my male friends and they were like, well, kind of. I'm like, now I'm older. I'm like, that's rape culture. Oh, if yeah. I agree to, you know, if I agree to study at your room, I'm not agreeing to make out with you. So, yeah, and I remember just telling my sister when she went away to school, like, you know, after me, like, just kind of giving her, like, the rundown of, like, you know, just being very mindful of her surroundings, of, like, not going to anyone's room, because for whatever reason, studying in a room means, hey, you're likely to get some sex from me. So, yeah. I just remember thinking, I can't remember, like, just thinking back, like, I really was like, you're going to be raped today. It's happening. I'm so glad. That's
really scary.
I said nightmares for, like, weeks. Of course, I didn't want to tell my parents because I was like, they're going to be like, you're never allowed. I was never allowed out anyway. You know, so I was like, they're like, you're never going to be allowed out. So I didn't tell anyone. I just was like, and then, you know, I remember now, I saw him a couple years later, like, downtown. And like he cursed me out. I think it was just crazy now that I look back on it. And he was like, oh, I remember you stupid, this and that. And I was just like, yeah, okay. And I just remember him like walking down the street yelling behind me and like other men looking. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, so you're not going to say anything to him, you know? Ugh, I just, yeah, sometimes people can be the absolute worst. I see why people are afraid when they have daughters, because not to say that men can't go through it, but I feel like women are so vulnerable physically, you know?
I feel like I've been so lucky. Like, I acknowledge how lucky I am. All the travel I've done, all the, like, close calls I've had, I haven't had any issues. But you know what? I don't feel like that's made me, like, I don't think I'm going to be a relaxed parent because I was so lucky. I think I'm going to be even more strict. I'm going to be like, I was lucky. You aren't going to be. Like, I used up all the luck.
yeah, right? Because they say, isn't it 1 in 4 women or 1 in 3 women are sexually like assaulted or raped?
That sounds right. I don't know what the statistic is, but it's a lot of women. But thank you for sharing that story.
No, you're welcome. I mean, you know, I think everybody has to be on their on their guard. I mean, thankfully, you know, I've got a good boo now. And honestly, I feel sorry for anybody who wants to step to the left or the right. Because Superman does a lot of things, but play is not one of them. Like, there's times I have to be careful because I'm like, if I'm complaining, like, oh, such and such client, he's like, who? Where do they live? I was like, no, that's not what we do. He's like, no, where do they live? It feels so weird because I just, you know, I grew up like just taking care of myself. So, like,
it's weird to have like it's someone, and honestly, some of the guys I dated weren't exactly the most like protective. And yeah. So to have someone so overly protective, I'm like, no, you can't. Are you gonna beat them up? No. Just talk. I'm like, you're 6'6". I don't think talking is what they're gonna see when they see you coming. No, and he's not much of a talker. So, but it feels nice to know, like, you don't want none of this, even though I'm not gonna let him. Just so you know.
Well, I'm glad to see that they at least actually fired him. It's a damn shame. And yeah. And like a third of the board apparently left. There's no way they didn't know this. I mean, he was settling all these lawsuits all these years. But I mean, Harvey, don't worry. You'll probably be our next president now. You'll be fine.
Exactly.
It's just really sad. But and you know, you want to give the advice to young women if this happens to you in a work area, in a workspace, you know. Take the complaint to your human resource department, to a superior or whatever. It really, and I know I don't want to spend too much time on the topic, but it really pisses me off because that is so inadequate, that advice, because, you know, we did a story last year on a young woman who did this exactly, went to HR several times and was retaliated against by her employer because she went to HR, was demoted, was given less work, you know, and although she ended up doing the same thing a lot of these women do, settling a lawsuit out of court with her superior, she, in order to keep her job, would have had to continue working with this creep. They didn't fire him. He was still working there. And so in the end, she still was the one punished. She had to leave. She was a single mother, leave her job and go find something else. And it's just not a perfect... There's just no like perfect la 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 like happy ending to this. I think it's so much the onus is on the companies themselves to take action and get rid of people who at the top who are taking advantage of their power, at the position in power. And I mean, I can't say it again. Like, we need more women in places of power, please.
Yes, for sure. That's the only way.
It's the only way I think it'll stop. And a lot of women, not just one, because I think one woman at a board table with a bunch of men is not any better. We need more.
Are we going to talk about, Dove?
Dove, we can talk. Is this the Danielle Brooks controversy?
No, the commercial. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, Danielle Brooks. Yeah. I think I learned about it because Danielle Brooks from Orange is the New Black, she wrote a column on Lenny Letter about the Dove commercial.
Okay.
So I came in it from the back door.
But. Okay, because I was like, no, I just saw it because I'm in this like branding group called like Build It, Brand It, Launch It with Arsha Jones. Is that Arsha's last name? But anyway, someone posts people are always posting kind of like case studies and like just asking, what are your thoughts? And we try, which I love about the group is that you try to fix other brands' kind of like issues in an effort to better understand marketing and stuff. So it's a great like, you know, kind of like. Great group. It's mostly women and brown women. Ow. So yeah, someone posted the still shot and I said, what in the heck? This can't be real. And then, you know, so people were kind of like going in and talking about like, you know, why this is not good, what Dove can do. But then I went to go watch the video, the actual commercial. And I know this is not super popular and I was not going to post this on my Facebook cause I don't want people to come for me, but the commercial wasn't that bad.
Explain the commercial because I actually haven't. I've only seen screenshots. I haven't actually watched it.
Okay, so the commercial, the purpose of this lotion or whatever soap is supposed to show that it can fit different skin types. So it's this cute brown girl with the bun. She takes off her brown shirt, and as she's taking it off, she becomes this redhead, this cute redhead with like a long ponytail. And then the redhead takes off her shirt, and she becomes this Middle Eastern, maybe Hispanic, kind of like looking beautiful woman, like long black hair. And as that woman takes it off, it's an older woman who's really pretty. So it goes from like different race and age and of like, hey, this soap can help everyone. And so when I saw the commercial in its entirety, I was like, oh. Although what I thought was strange was why did Dove have this screenshot like, from what I look like, the woman in the group who shared it from Dove's page. I'm like, this is the most unflattering screenshot because all you're showing is a woman, a black woman,
slowly unpeeling and becoming a white woman. Like, I don't know how anywhere
watched that. So people probably just saw the screenshot and made a judgment call.
Yes. And, yeah. But in, I guess with all that's going on, even with the larger commercial and not being that bad, I don't know that that order was a good idea anyway. You know, because with all that's happening, and I'm just like, Dove, like,
and someone said it was just lotion?
It's either lotion or soap. And honestly, like, someone said it best. Someone said, hey, Dove, I'm looking at the whole commercial, because I was like, no, it's meant to show the different women. They're like, I got you. But did you bring a brown person into the room and say, hey, thoughts? Honestly, because this could have, it's just true that if you brought someone brown into the room and said thoughts about what, you know, someone's going to say, I get what you're trying to do. Oh, sorry. This is, yes, I got it. It was a mosquito. And ooh, I said, not today.
It's the little things.
Right. I get what you're trying to do here, but it having a brown woman, black woman turn into a white woman, no matter how you slice it, is not a really, it's not a good idea. You know, and that I see where you're going with, like, but there has to be a better way to illustrate that different skin types and skin tones can use this. There, I mean, obviously there has to be. I mean, Rihanna just launched Fenty and showed that, like, hey, this is a makeup brand that caters to all kinds of women without having to do this, you know?
Least they match the undershirts to the color of their skin. Like, it's nice. Hey, we have undershirts in different shades now.
Like, yeah, I just was like, so like I said, the overall outrage, I mean, I the still shot looked terrible, but the commercial in its entirety wasn't as bad, although obviously it wasn't good.
They need someone at the marketing table, maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I honestly, I can't say if I had seen that, I would have raised any alarms.
Honestly, I can honestly say I probably wouldn't have. Because when I saw the commercial, I was like, oh, okay. And awesome. So honestly, I went about my business. And then when I saw it blew up, I was like, are we talking about the same commercial? But then I realized most people had never seen the commercial. And even then, you know, by then they were already so enraged that there was really no pulling back. I think most people just were reacting to that still. Because that still shot is damaging.
It is. And it's just not the time to be making even like, even the perception of any sort of like racism or perception of colorism is just, people are just really, we're just all sensitive to it right now. But I don't know, I'm giving Dove a pass. Can I be, cause like Dove does so much for, I don't know. I think they were one of the earliest brands to like have different skin colors, different ages. And they're at, they try. It's not like, I think it wasn't as dramatic, quite as dramatic as like that Shea Moisture controversy of a couple months ago. That's just my, I'm playing devil's advocate. Send me your hate mail at brandambitionpodcast.
I know. I was going to say, I know people are going to be like, what? And like I said, I'm not saying, Amanda's not saying that it was well executed or whatever. And not to say that, you know, there's not a history, obviously. Like, I mean, if you look at some old Dove advertisements, like you there literally is like a little brown baby getting into like Dove soap and coming out quote unquote clean and white. So really? yes,
what? I've never seen that. Okay, maybe I need to brush up on my Dove commercial history.
So there's definitely that. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, like, I think that a lot of the backlash is mostly the screenshot, not necessarily the whole commercial, and that it's not well executed. And this is what happened. It's kind of like my brown break today, but it's not well executed because to me there's not enough people in decision making. Like rooms to say, hey, yeah, that's not really gonna fly.
Yeah. Apparently, I shouldn't be in marketing.
Yeah.
I'd be like, yeah, it's great. Did you read it? How do you feel since we're gonna be on these controversy topics? So, and this is also related to like, I think being a person, like being at work and all the things happening in our country right now. The xenophobia, the racism, the Black Lives Matter, the police brutality, the NFL protests, whatever. All these subject matters are very delicate subjects to broach in the workplace. And I think we're all seeing the worst of this from Jemele Hill at ESPN, who was just fired for her tweets speaking out against the Dallas Cowboys owner for his disrespect, quote unquote, of players who have been taking the knee in protest of Black Lives Matter. So she was fired. Remember, this is the same like ESPN anchor who Trump himself, or the Trump White House, I think, came out saying that she should be fired when she criticized him, called him a white supremacist. on air. Thoughts?
I mean, I personally, I mean, if the truth is the truth, call it the truth, you know? And I knew that they were, because I saw, like, you know, that, and I knew when I saw, like, you know, the story about her tweets, I said, yeah, they're going to let her go. Because honestly, and not because it's right, because it's so easy to dispose of brown women. Like, who's fighting for you that has any position of power? You know, who's the woman above you that says, no, not today? You know? And so it's just such a shame, you know, but I'm just so glad that more and more people are willing to speak out despite the consequences, you know, because it's almost like after a while, it's like you can't fire everyone. You can't let go of everyone. You can't diss everyone, you know?
Yeah. Well, what she was saying is, you know, if you don't agree with what the Dallas Cowboys founder has done or the owner, then you should boycott their advertisers or whatnot. Yeah. I don't know. I understand, like, you know, being a journalist, I don't cover like politics, you know, she's in sports. There is like this, and it's been completely blurred, but this expectation to be completely unbiased. And I think it's really hard when you're a journalist, because we're human beings. And I think we all have to be careful in our jobs. Just what you say on your Twitter feed and on Facebook can get you fired. Like,
yeah.
And it's just, it's up to the companies. You know, they gave her, I think it looks like they gave her a pass for the first transgression and she apologized. And I guess the second time, it was too much. But I think about that. I definitely edit. I censor the hell out of myself. I don't even tweet hardly anymore because I'm too afraid of what I might say, because there's just too much I want to say. And I, when I put things on Facebook, I definitely have my filter for friends only, except for acquaintances. And acquaintances are like all of my work colleagues and relatives and whoever, you know, because I'm trying to be over protective of my own voice so that I don't get myself into trouble.
No, and I think that too, honestly. I mean, I do censor myself. Like, if it's straight, like, Budgetista stuff, like, you're not going to see me really talk about, like, politics and stuff on, like, the Budgetista on Facebook or the Budgetista on Instagram. Unless, I mean, every once in a while on, like, Instagram, I'm like, I'll share something. But, like, my personal page, I'm a lot less, I'm a lot more free to share. And even then, it's still, I share my opinion, but in a careful way, knowing that I'm still, even though it's Tiffany, you know, there's still my brand and my business that's attached to it. But it doesn't mean I won't share my displeasure. I will. I'll say, you know, this is unfair, or this is not right, or this is, you know, like, I, you know, but I might not share as much on the Budgetista page, at least not in that way, you know. But then sometimes I'm overwhelmed and I'm like, I don't care. This is terrible. You know, and so, but even then, I'm still mindful of like how, like, you're not going to see me curse, but that's just not me anyway. But I mean, you're not going to see me curse. You're not going to see me, you know, wish harm upon anyone. You're not going to see that, you know. You're going to see, and just know that if I do share something I thought about and I looked at it and I read it and I read it again, you know, because I just feel like I have to say something, you know. So it's hard because, you know, these days you have to think to yourself 10 years, 20 years from now. You know, what is it that I'd like for people to see? And so, and everyone's, I mean, I know there are some people who their ministry, you know, for lack of a better word, is to disrupt in that way, meaning that they are here to be the megaphone and say, no, 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 politics, religion, all of that stuff, I say it. And that's their ministry. That's the way that they make the world better. And I commend that and I'm happy for that. But I know for me that one of the things that my disruption is to say, you go out there and you shine a light, person, and I will support you. But what I do is I try to take women, especially women of color, and say, okay, girl, at the end of the day, if you don't have no money, you don't have no power. So let's get your credit together. Let's get you this house. Let's get you saving. So that's what I actively, that's my activism, is that, like, if I can teach brown women how to not only stabilize their finances, but to grow and excel, that is where I'm like, that's what I'm working on, you know? So sometimes, because people will be like, oh, Tiffany, are you going to comment on that? And I might, but honestly, that's my overarching goal. Like, I'm not teaching financial education because it's not random. It's very calculated to cultivate a group of brown women who are not only just financially secure and stable, but who are killing it out there. So that way, you know, when the time comes for you to ask for a raise, you know, there's a brown girl sister sitting behind the big desk. When it time comes for you to borrow money, it's a sister sitting there. It's what, you know what I mean? Like, that's really important to me. And yeah, that's really important to me. So like, that's kind of my way of giving back.
Hey, hey, BA fam. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. That's incredible. This is according to Indeed data and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 150 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Okay, it's smart. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/brownambition. Just go to Indeed.com/brownambition right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/brownambition. Terms and conditions apply. You need to hire. You need Indeed.
Yeah.
Shall we segue?
Yes, it's a perfect segue of breaking and boosting. And I think I wanna boost the brown women who are in those positions. Honestly, every single major contract that I've gotten except for one has been because a brown woman was in that room fighting for me. Like, I think of like the major brands that I work with, like a Ford or even like some of the TV shows that I'm on now and stuff. Like, when I finally get to the space, there's a sister there who pulls me to the side and says, girl, I've been telling them about you for 3 years. I've been putting together PowerPoints and presentations and this and this and this and that. And finally they said, well, they open the door just a little bit. And Tiffany, you come in, and when you smash it, I look at them like, I told you. And, you know, and I just wish that, that's why it's so important for us to be in those spaces, because so much of what I do, I would not be able to do without these women who I don't even know advocating for me like they're my sister, cousin, mother, friend, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you how many women, like, literally, like, you know, it'll be something major. And I'm like, this is so great. How'd you find me? And they're like, oh, Jalissa told us. And I'm like, who's Jalissa? And Jalissa's like, girl, me, you know, or like, no, Tanya told us, or no, Drina told us, or what? And almost without fail, that person will have told me that they've been working on it for a number of years. Can you imagine? Years. And I'm like, really? They're like, girl, yes. They've been saying, oh, we want someone. We're looking for a finance expert. Or we're looking for this. I'm like, oh, what about Tiffany? Nah, no. Nah. What about Tiffany? Nah, no. Nah. And she was like, year after year, I bring you up. I pull up your numbers. I show them your growth. I show them your, and, you know, finally, you know, and then your job and my job is to kill it when I'm there and to over deliver. So that way they can say, see, I told you. And so that way it leaves the door open so more brown ambition folks can come through the door. And I just want to give a brown boost to those women who are in those spaces. Like, when I work with Prudential, it was two brown women that pulled me in. Prudential is, I am not the target audience for like a Prudential, you know, it's very much an old boys club at Prudential for the most part, but these women pulled me in on small little assignments and said, Tiffany, just kill it. Okay, then bigger assignments, Tiffany, just kill it. And then it grew. And before you know it, Prudential was working with more and more brown influencers and bloggers and stuff as it relates to personal finance. And so I just, yeah, I cannot thank these women enough for, one, being where they are when there are not many of them, and being an advocate. Like, I did an interview today, and the woman on the phone, even though she wasn't a brown woman, she was a woman. She said, oh my God, it was so nice talking to you. She said, they wanted me to do an interview and they had all these lists. And I was like, no, I refuse to interview another white man about, and I was rolling. And this is a Jewish lady. And she was so cool. We had just a great conversation about kids, about everything. And so we were just talking in general. She was like, no, when I get the opportunity to write or publication, I'm always looking like, are there any people of color? Are there any women? Like, they know things too. And that's what you need, is that the more of us that can be in these spaces, the more of us we can pull in. And so, yeah, I just want to give a brown boost to those women out there who are, you know, not only like in these spaces, but are making it their business to pull other women in.
Amen. I endorse. I endorse that message.
So what about you, Miss Mandra? Are you going to boost a break?
Oh, you know me. Let's keep things positive. I'm going to do a boost.
Yay! Shoulder shimmy, shoulder shimmy.
With a twist.
Oh, gosh.
So my boost is, speaking of putting women of color behind in the boardrooms, in the executive suites, I think behind the camera is important too. Case in point, this fabulous Chinese producer at Fusion put together this really exceptional video on the history of tipping. And I think those two things are related. I don't think that many other producers would have cared to look into the history of tipping if it weren't a minority woman. So I was really excited to see this video by this young producer, but I had no idea the history of tipping. I mean, I like to consider myself like well-educated, but no one ever told me tipping goes all the way back to slave days or Jim Crow and like the history of African Americans in this country. And like, did you see the video? I know I posted on Brown Ambition. Did you get a chance to watch it yet?
No, but I know you're talking about, but I did not see the
video.
It's good.
It's really good. So basically the concept of tipping, you know, obviously in Europe, there is no tipping. Like, you just like pay whatever you pay. And in many countries, I don't know, but I don't want to speak for every country, but like when you leave the United States, I'm like, oh, this is so nice. No one has to tip at all. In our country, you know, waiters and wait staff get paid like $2 minimum wage. I think an hour is the federal minimum wage for wait staff. And they're supposed to make up the rest of their wages in tipping. Back in the day when tipping was made a policy, it was a way for employers to get away with not paying black workers who were mostly in service jobs any money at all. And tipping was seen as like something that you would do to someone in a someone you see is lower than you. Like it was seen as, oh, you wouldn't tip a white waiter. That's rude. You know, but you would tip the black waiter because that's their station. It took a long time for it to be seen as, and of course, more and more non-minorities taking service jobs to be seen as, okay, we actually need these tips, tip well. But even today, as the video points out, and I don't know why I've never considered this or thought about this either, but studies show that people of color, especially women of color in service industries and waiting jobs, get tipped significantly less on average than white wait staff. So yeah, I kind of lied. That was more of a break. But a boost for the video done by a great Chinese producer, a young woman named Isabel, and a break for continued racism messing up our money.
You know what? It's so like, I try my best now to really tip. Like, I try to at least get, you know, like the 15%. I mean, I give at least a 15%. And then, you know, I really try to tip well. Like, if you were, you know, a good waiter or waitress, then I try to be like, oh, you know what? Here's an extra, because you know, you'd like to reward good behavior, but at the very least, get your 15, 20% in, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have that one friend who you go to dinner with and they don't tip? I did, honestly, and I stopped going to dinner with her.
Yeah, I was going to say, I stopped, honestly, because, I mean, even when, if you don't have enough money to tip, then you don't have enough money to eat out. Like, that's part of it. Like, you have to pay for the service, for someone to bring food to the table and bring you your water when you request it, all that kind of stuff costs, that tip is to pay for that. But I will say, sometimes what's kind of annoying, but I get why people do it. Have you ever been to those restaurants where the tip is included?
They're becoming more of the norm in New York City, like a lot of, but no, I haven't gone to one yet.
And so the only thing I don't like, because I remember I went to a restaurant with like, a family, maybe it was like five or six of us. So oftentimes if you have like a larger, like over four or five, sometimes they'll include the tip in the bill.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm like, tell me, I remember the first time it happened, and I didn't realize, so we were all paying, and then I was like, okay, everybody, your tips. And so we were all gathering additional money, and then someone happened to look, they're like, wait, the tip is on here. We were going to pay like an additional, whatever, $70 or whatever. And not to say we wouldn't have tipped a little extra, but we were going to do the customary tip. I'm like, that should be clearly stated, so people are not double tipping. Like, I mean, it's one thing to tip somebody well. It's another thing to literally double their tip by like $100, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the only thing. But yeah, no, I'm a good tipper now, I have to say. I'm not going to lie. In my youth, I was not a great tipper. I mean, I was the bare minimum tipper, but I was not like a great, like, here's a little extra something. Because I was like, I used to take my calculator and be like, okay, $4.32. Let me give my 30. Anybody got two pennies? Like, that's, I tipped exactly 15. And now I'm like, go ahead and keep this $6 or $7. $3 for your troubles, you know? Yeah, I'm definitely a better tipper now.
I try, you tip what you can, but you got to tip something, and don't be cheap. It's a couple bucks. Like, I don't know. It's a turn off for me when people are like that cheap with their money. Then maybe don't order Seamless if you don't want to pay $2 for a tip. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And then exactly. Cause I mean, like I said, tipping is part of the fact that like you have to pay for service.
I mean, if you want to be mad at somebody, be mad at our legislators who haven't changed the laws on, and they're still allowing people to get paid dirt cheap money for, you know, these minimum wage waitressing and what do you call it, waitering like
wait something
wait
I don't
staffering,
know
jobs, because you know they're allowed to pay $2 and whatever as a minimum wage, and then you have to make up the money in tips. So if you want to, you know, piss somebody, if you want to yell at somebody, don't not tip the poor person who's stuck with this minimum wage. You know, send a letter to your congressman or woman, make your voice heard.
Exactly.
I hope that friend is listening. She knows who she is.
We always have good questions.
Yes, we do. We have a couple of good questions this week. And if you want to send your questions to us, you can go to brownambitionpodcast.com. And also, if you just want to go straight to the source, you can email us at brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks. real quick, we have a question from someone who is having some issues with her secured credit card and needs our help. Girl. Okay. Doesn't say if she wants to be anonymous or not, so we'll err on the side of just calling her Natalie. Okay, so Natalie says, I opened a $500 secured credit card with Bank of America. Okay. Since then, I've been a few days late in payments once or twice. I also carry high balances, but I pay the card $300 to $400 at a time. The bank hasn't increased my credit limit or changed the card to an unsecured card. Should I wait for the bank, or should I try and increase my own credit by depositing more money onto the secured card? Or should I just pay off this card and stop using it? What's the best action I can take to increase the limit of my card and switch it over to an unsecured credit card? Ooh,
child, when you said you were late a couple times, I said, ooh!
This is a danger zone. This is like...
Yes, it is.
This is like the person who's like, so I saw this pill on Dr. Oz and it says I'm going to lose 50 pounds.
I know.
No, don't. Oh, I'm like afraid. You know, you don't want to. No.
Yes.
This is danger zone. So from the sound of your question, I'm hearing that you're not quite prepared perhaps for a unsecured credit card. Right? Is that what you're hearing?
The fact that she will pay $300 to $400 lump sum lets me know that it's not that she's not ready for it, but she's probably going about it the wrong way. Because if she were to say, honestly, I'm at $300 or $400 I've used on the card and I just can't seem to get ahead. But the fact that she's able to pay those lump sums like that lets me know, okay, there's money in play. She does have enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
so,
that's a good
yeah.
point. For people who don't know what a secured card is and how it works, so the general idea with a secured card is you put down a deposit. It's like $500. So the bank takes your money and says, thank you. Now we're going to give you a line of credit, quote unquote, and you're going to use the money you gave us as collateral. So if you don't make your payments, we just keep this money and go about our business. But if you make payments on time to yourself almost, at the end of 12 months or however long it is, we will give you back your deposit and give you the chance, in some cases, to upgrade to a regular credit card, unsecured credit card. And all that means is that you don't put any money down. They just give you the money to borrow without requiring collateral.
Yes.
I call it like a credit card with training wheels. That's what I call secure cards.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And it's a good way to build credit. The best way to use it, obviously, is to make all your payments on time. I hope that these late payments didn't hurt her credit too bad. But she's wondering if she should, because clearly her limit is too small for her. She wants a card with the higher limit.
Yeah.
And she wants to know if she should keep waiting for the bank to increase her limit, because it's been over a year, she says. Or should she just drop this card, close it, and apply for a regular credit card somewhere else?
So here's the thing. This is what I suggest. Like, this is what's going to make a bank make your secured card. So I'll give you an example. Superman had a secured card with our bank. When I met him, he had it for maybe like, I don't know, maybe like 8 months or whatever, but it was almost maxed out and he was making small payments a month. And I was like, why? And he thought that's what he was supposed to do, until I was like, well, just pay it off. And so he did. A few months later, his credit score really jumped up. And so I had him put small charges on the card a month and paid off in full every month. And by the time the end of the year hit, they doubled his limit, because it was 500. It was now 1,000 or something like that. Yeah, 900 to 1,000. Gave him back his deposit and took the secured part off the card and became an unsecured regular card. So a bank, your bank is looking to see, one, do you make on-time payments? That's the bare minimum if you want them to make it a regular card. Two, if you really want to increase the likelihood of them making a regular card, keep your limit under 30%, ideally paying it off every month. So I don't know if this is your only card, but, you know, if you can keep, if it's, say, it's a $500 card, you really never want to have a balance over $150. And ideally, pay it off in full every month. Is it possible? Are you like really using this card? Is it possible just to put a small charge, like your Netflix account or something, on this card and pay it off every month? If you do that for the next few months, then you can approach them and say, hey, you know, I've been really good with the card. I paid off in full. When will the like the secured part be able to be taken off? Because you can call and ask. You know, typically after a year of proper usage, they take it off. But because you've missed a couple, or you were late a few times, so they're still probably keeping their eye on you. So that's what I would suggest, is that. And so what I would do, and this is what I did for Superman, is I had him automate. So if I were you, so you don't miss payments anymore, if you're able to pay a $300 or $400 lump sum on the secured card, why not on the day that your balance is due, that you automate a smaller payment, so you never are late, meaning, like, let's just say your minimum amount is $25 or $35. Automate the typical minimum amount. So that way, you know, at least I'm not late. Even if I didn't pay it off in full, at least I'm not late. And then when you get your lump sum and pay it off every month. That's what I would do at the very least, to start to get the process going in your favor.
I agree. I don't know that it's a good idea to run and open a different credit card, although it's possible that she might get approved for a different credit card if her credit's improved from the secured card behavior. Do you feel like when secured cards upgrade you to an unsecured credit card, to like a regular credit card, is it often a good deal? Like, are you getting a card with good terms or annual? Like, are there fees usually? Like, what's like a step up credit card? Do you know anything about that?
Well, I mean, I could just tell you from experience of Superman that there was no additional fee. His interest rate was decent. It was kind of in alignment with his score, which was okay at the time. It was like maybe like low 700-ish, and I forget what his interest rate was, but I remember comparing it to kind of my interest rate, and it was decent. And so it's more so like, even if that's not your usable card. So, for example, I have a credit card that I've had forever. That I'm not going to close because it helps me with my length of credit history. My interest rate is not great, so the only thing that goes on that card is my Netflix. And then I have another credit card that the interest rate is great. And so that's the card that I use. So you might have your secured card upgrades itself, and that's just the kind of the card that you use, like, to just like prove that you can make a payment every month and pay off something every month. And then your credit is strong enough for you to really apply and get qualified for a card with a much better interest rate. So sometimes cards can have different usage. So for me, one of my cards is not really to use. It's just to prove, hey, Tiffany's good with cards. She pays it off every month, even though it's just one small charge.
So that's what I would look into, because you don't necessarily, if your credit's already taking a hit, I don't know that I want you to get an inquiry for applying, because every time you apply for credit, whether you get it or not, you get a little ding on your credit score that brings down your score, you know, a few, it could be a few points and it could be a number of points, double digit points, depending. And so I'd rather you massage this card and get upgraded without the inquiry than go and apply for another card that you may or not even get and then get that ding.
We have a related question, and I think it highlights one of the, it highlights sort of the importance for of shopping around even for the best secured card offers, because secured cards are an awesome tool to build and improve your credit, but some of them have fees. Like, I didn't realize this. Some of them charge monthly fees. We got a question from listener Opal a couple of weeks ago, and she said, I recently paid off a couple of credit cards. I feel really liberated. And I was going through them to be sure that all of them had a zero balance, but I noticed one card charges a fee of $4 a month, and I charged a $4 fee even though I had a zero balance. I had to email a couple more times with her to get to the bottom of it. It is a secured card that she has. So the question is, should I just close out the secured card account or leave it open and keep paying this $4 fee on the side?
If she has other cards, then I would close it. I ended up closing mine. So I got a secured card for my business because it's similar. They were like, I applied for a regular card. They were like, oh, you tried it, girl. You don't even have any type of credit history. And so they were like, but you could get a secured card to kind of build your business credit history. So I did. And there was a fee. It wasn't monthly, but it was yearly. And I didn't realize that because like it wasn't a little bit. It was like, I don't know, maybe like 50 or 60 bucks or something. And so I realized, yeah, once I was able to get for whatever reason, the business account didn't automatically upgrade to a regular card. I had to apply for a whole separate regular card at my same bank. So I got it. And so I closed the other card because I'm like, well, why am I going to pay the 60 bucks a month or whatever it was a year when I have my regular card at this bank now? So if it was the only card I had, I would maybe wait, apply for, a regular card. So, you know, you can keep your established credit history or you can start to build credit history with that card. But I would close it because if your credit score is good enough for a regular card, then that's really the purpose to me of a secured card, is to build your credit history and credit score. So if it's good enough for a regular card, you no longer really need it, especially if it's charging you monthly, you know?
Yeah. All right, we ready for some wins?
Wins, you go first.
I'm going to do a win for my Chase Reserve card, which is still serving me life 2 years since, wait, how long has it been?
I feel like I've been. I got those for you.
Yeah, it was this time last year, I think I got my Reserve card, paid for the honeymoon trip, not the airfare and some other things, but not actually hotels, but for like a good chunk of the honeymoon. I've been milking this card all year long and I still have points. We're going to DR, like I said, and I found a better deal on my hotel through Chase Ultimate Rewards than I did online. Like I think I got like $20 off per night. And then I booked my airfare through them and I'm just the happiest customer. I think it's the one, like we said, like there's a $450 annual fee, but if you can manage it, I think it's totally worth it. Cause even after I went through that bonus, you know, everyone said, yeah, you know, with the 100,000 point bonus, of course you want to get it. But I think if you travel a lot and eat out a lot, even without that crazy high sign-on bonus, I think they downgraded it to like what, 50 or 40,000?
Yeah, something like that. But like, yeah, I got that signing bonus literally like the day before because you were like, don't wait.
Don't wait because they snatched it out real quick. They lost so much money on that. But anyway, shout out to finding the credit card that has the keys to my heart and just matches me very well. And I think even if you miss the initial crazy high bonus, but if you travel a ton for work or for whatever and you like eating out, I still think it makes a lot of sense because they give you that $300 travel credit every year and then they give you 3 points back on like dining and travel and you get like TSA pre-check and global entry and all that kind of like other perks. So
yeah.
I'm a stan.
So I wonder if for the travel credit, like if you don't use it, do you lose it?
Well, you don't have a choice. They just give it to you.
Okay, because I've seen it. Look, I just saw it this year, and I was just thinking to myself, wait, I didn't use it this year yet. And so I'm just, like, looking
Oh, no, I see what you mean. Oh, actually, I don't know. I was just – yeah. I said that because I happened to book a flight the same day that the travel credit was applied, and I was like, oh, they just did that so quick.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to – yeah, well, we'll see. So, yeah, no, because I did see it on there. I was like, oh, there's money on here.
If you don't spend at least $300 on travel, you probably shouldn't have the card in the first place.
Is that what it does? No, I use it like all the time. And I'm like, I'm sure I do. Because I use it whenever I book flights and stuff. But I saw it recently on there. And I'm like, wait, how do I have to apply this?
Well, you don't do the applying. Like, it just tells. So whenever you, so let's say, you know, the clock restarts on your travel credit. Then you spend $20 on Uber. You spend the $20 and then you'll see on your statement, it'll be like negative
$20. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, how did that work? Because yes, I see. Because yeah, no, that's the card I've linked to everything. And now I'm super excited because I've actually linked it. So I do a lot of Facebook marketing and I spend like quite a bit amount of money. And so I realized, wait, I'm missing out on some money. So I'm going to link that card to my Facebook marketing account. So that way I can just be earning. Points on top of points. Cause I told Superman, I'm like, the way this house is looking, cause I really want a dope house. So I'm willing to spend a little extra. I was like, we won't be able to go on, you know, a nice vacation in a little while, but maybe we can earn a nice vacation. So that's totally what we're working on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It also helps traveling in hurricane season. Not going to lie.
Oh, that's because does it have automatic, insurance?
The Chase card does have, has really good traveler's insurance. Yeah. I think if there were a weather related thing, I think I'd be covered, but luckily, knock on wood, things are looking good, for us. So I'm excited. You're welcome, Chase, for free advertising.
Yes, exactly. Right. Somebody from Chase call us because I'm not going to lie. I'm not really a huge Chase fan only because, you know, you guys took my house, but no, you know, no hard feelings, whatever.
You're not alone.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, other than that, your card is pretty dope. My win is Marley Diaz. Remember Marley Diaz? She started that movement, 1,000 Black Girl Books.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I know her mom. They all live in, like, Jersey. And her mom has this awesome nonprofit called, I forget the name of her nonprofit, which, of course.
Rude.
Yes, I know. And it's, like, really dope because I used to volunteer for it. And so every year it's like a summer camp for like empowering young brown girls. So her mom, Janice, is awesome. And you know how people have like their 15 minutes of fame?
Yes.
So, well, her mom, Janice, is a doctor, like a PhD, and super smart. And her mom is, and her father, cause I can't even, you know, let him, I just don't know him personally, but they've done such an awesome job with, like, really making sure that, like, Marley is everywhere. She spoke at, like, the Forbes Summit. She's amazing, like, as it is. Like, you know, like, if you speak to her and meet her. But, you know, sometimes things happen, and it's just kind of like, oh, you know, there's a flash in the pan, and that was so great. No, she is still going so strong. I mean, so strong. She just wrote a book. Ava DuVernay did the forward to it. Yeah, she's interviewing one of my publicists, Drina, her client, who her name is Patrice Cullors. She is the co-founder of Black Lives Matter. She's just, I don't, I like, I see this year, she's only 12. And so I think the movement started a year or two ago. So just imagine a 10, 11-year-old, just like, and I just love the fact that her mom is so supportive. Like, you know, she told her mom, hey, there's not enough brown girl books, you know? And her mom's like, what are you going to do about it? And she said, let's collect some. And they did. And just to see, like, how it's evolved. And I think, was it Teen Vogue or one of these magazines is, like, helping her start a magazine to encourage other young girls. I mean, just Marley is just amazing.
She's living Mandy Woodruff's 12-year-old dream. Marley.
Yes. She just spoke at the Girl Scout convention and smashed it. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I would have been so jealous of her if I were 12. That's amazing.
I just, meanwhile at 12, I was still like, which Barbie? I mean, I don't play Barbies, but kind of I do. I mean, what? At 12, I was like, I don't even know what I was doing at 12. I was still trying to figure out, like, what braids to get. Like,
I
you know,
moved on to Beanie Babies by 12.
I know I wasn't doing anything like this. And I'm just really proud of her because she's just dope, like, self-aware, self-possessed. just, you know, just an all around awesome young woman with awesome parents. And I'm just really proud of her. Like, she just popped up in my feed. And I just said, she truly is brown ambition at its finest.
Love
it. Marley, and I'm going to ask your mom, you know, should I be blessed with a brown baby? So are you teaching how to raise an awesome brown girl lesson? Because I'll take those lessons. For real, every parent I know with kids that are, like, amazing, you know, and not, like, amazing in, like, I push my kid. I'm a helicopter mom. I push my kids kind of way. Just amazing in this, like, hey, your kid is well-adjusted, happy, smart, you know, that kind of thing. I'm asking all of them, like, so what's your secret? Because, you know, if I have a little bambini or bambino, I want them to be happy. And, you know, but I also want them to get straight A's. Like, no, honestly, that doesn't matter to me as much as them being happy and, like, figuring out, like, what their gift is and living that truth.
I think they'll already have a leg up.
That's some awesome. You never parents. Know. Kids could. Woo, child,
it'll be only their fault if they don't shine.
I see some kids and I'm like, who are your parents?
I know. Well, 18 long years, you know, you could be killing it the first five and really mess up the middle ones and they'll still turn out all right, you know?
Okay. Ooh, somebody just wrote me. This is just a little something to end on. There's this like psychic lady, this brown psychic woman that I follow. Although I'm not really sure, you know, how much I believe in like, but I don't know. I just feel like anything's possible.
Okay.
So she wrote me like a nice little message. You know, I'm probably not supposed to share it, but you know, I'm going to overshare. She was like, she's sending me, she's like, I have a psychic message about pregnancy heading your way late December. You need a ton of rest, less travel. I'm like, damn it. Feet up into the sixth of the month. I'm like, darn it. I'm like, I'm supposed to go to Australia. Cut the stress, even good stress. Oh, I hope the little one arrives. Wow. And she said, pay close attention to your body. So, you know, me and Superman are trying. Like, you know, like I actually have a...
You know her?
I do. Well, kind of. Like a lot of my friends, like, get readings and stuff with her. And they're always like, you should. And when she... Because she does lives. And, like, so I watch her live sometimes and I'll ask a question or whatever. So, like, not like, you know, like we've met. But, like, social media met. Like, so we're cool enough. So she, you know, so when she wrote that, I was like... Because we're trying, honestly. I actually have an appointment with, like... doctor in a couple of weeks and then two because I'm 38. Well, not yet, in a couple of days, but because I'll be 38. Like, you know, like also looking at like a fertility like doctor to like really talk about that, you know?
You know, you're more likely to have twins the older you wait.
I know.
Get ready for that.
And Superman is already a twin.
Oh,
I know.
I think it's over. Oh, I want you to have twins. That'll be exciting.
That's why he's ginormous. They like broke their mother in half, him and his twin brother. I'm like, I can't do it.
There's all kinds of technology now. You'll be fine.
Oh my God. I think his daughter was like 13 pounds. Something like insane.
No,
I know.
Stop.
When he showed me her newborn picture, she looks like a one-year-old. I was like, how come you don't have any pictures of Supergirl as a newborn? He's like, that is. I'm like, no. Like when she was like born. He's like, that is. I'm like, no. I mean, yo, this baby, I swear, Mandy, she looks a full 6 to 8 months. And I'm like, this is how she came out of the womb? Meanwhile, her mother is like my size. She's not big. She's little petite. They're like, yeah, he was like, yeah, it was a lot for her. I was like, oh my God. I don't know if I'm ready. Oh, child, be careful who you choose, ladies. If you get a big one, you never know. So yeah, on that note, you never know. Let's be on baby watch. Send me your good baby vibes, all that kind of stuff. I'm open about it. I'm like, I want to have a baby.
Go do some what you call it with the needles on your face.
Oh,
acupuncture.
Yeah, not that much. Not that much. I'm like, I'm scared of needles.
I mean, I just read your horoscope for Leo and Libra. I think you'll be okay in that department. Just everything else is let go and let God. Let the magic of the ovaries work.
Right now, Jerome is like, and I'm out. All right, on that note, y'all, it was awesome as usual.
Was it when I said ovaries? Was that it?
It's like, tap it out. We should give a little, but we never know sometimes if we're going to go left. Sorry, Jerome. Next time.
I don't need Jerome hanging over us, making us apologize for saying ovaries. Jerome is here. Jerome can stay if he would like to stay. If Jerome leaves because we say ovaries, he doesn't deserve us. That is the truth.
Sure. Oh, see, this is why I have you around, Leo. See, that's what the Libra needs.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.